The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackedSidewalks.com. Special episode today. Yes, it's Joe McCann, it's Phil Bush, and we have a third guest on today's show, Alan Bukowski from Cracked Sidewalks. Alan, thanks for joining the show, man.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Feel like it's been a long time coming.
So I feel like everyone in the hashtag MUBB, you know, Twitter space probably is familiar with Alan, has probably read his stuff on Cracked Sidewalks. Maybe you follow him on Twitter X and things like that. But Alan, for those who don't know you, just tell us a little bit about yourself as far as a Marquette fan, how long you've been doing Cracketology. How do you like that?
I love it.
Bracketology on Cracked Sidewalks and things like that.
My passion for Marquette started when I was in school. Oddly enough, I don't think we ran into each other too much, but I was class of 2004. So there for the Dwayne Wade Final Four run. At the time, you know, thought this is fantastic. We're going to do this every year, maybe every couple of years. we see how that's gone. And I got into bracketology, I believe it would have been around 2011, 2012. Really, it came down to me being frustrated with a certain team from VCU getting into the field that I didn't think was deserving. That their coach may have some connection to Marquette these days. But since then, I've really gone through thoroughly every year, broken down the bracket, all the teams, where they stand. And most of that time I've been doing it on Cracked Sidewalks. I had a few years where I did it for another website, but Cracked Sidewalks is kind of like that Al Pacino, you know, just when you think you get out, they pull you back in. And yeah. So I'm back here.
So how did you end up like, I view bracket matrix as like the go-to, hey, who are the bracketologists of, you know, well, Joe Lenardi's on there, so I don't know that it's of high regard, but of regard. How long have you been, have you represented Cracked Sidewalks on bracket matrix, and how did that end up happening?
So currently I've been on bracket matrix with Cracked Sidewalks since 2019. I had been on there before in the early days of the Matrix around 13, 14, but when I switched sites, they scrubbed all the old Cracked Sidewalks data. So none of it goes back to that point anymore. And it really was just an email. They had a link at the bottom of their page and I was like, oh, I'll just send them something and see if I get a response. And the first time they responded back, sure. And you know, at the time there were probably 30 to 40 people submitting brackets. It was a much smaller community than the 200 or so that they end up with today. And once I got in there that first year, I just kept sending their links. Now I just, every time I put a new post out, I tag them on Twitter and they go in and extract everything from the articles that I write on CrackedSidewalks.com.
So you got an email with a link, you click the link. Do you also send money to Nigerian princes on occasion or?
Not as of yet.
Okay.
So far I've been able to avoid those scams.
Okay. Well, it'll just be a random coincidence if you get an email from me with a link to click on. No, don't think anything of it. But anyway.
All right. So guys, in today's show, like we kind of teased in the last episode of Scrambled Eggs, we're going to hit a couple things. We're going to talk, maybe preview the bracket, see what Alan thinks about Marquette and also other Big East teams, and maybe a little preview of what we're expecting slash hoping for on Selection Sunday, and maybe a little Big East tournament talk. One last thing, just a prep for you, Alan. You know, we don't just have you on here just because you're a Cracked Sidewalks Marquette guy. You actually have some credibility. I mean, to say that, maybe you brag about yourself a little bit. You know, they actually score the bracketologists on Bracket Matrix as far as who does the best brackets. And you've done very well the last few years, haven't you?
I believe 2 years ago, I was top 50, which out of 200, 250 isn't too bad. Last year, I was definitely off a little bit more. I was closer to the 100 mark. And that was in large part, I think, because I completely wrote off championship week and they specifically mentioned I had Marquette as a 3 seed, which some Marquette fans won't let me forget about. And they ended up as a 2, and the committee chair specifically said because of what happened during championship week. So it's led to a little bit of reevaluation, but I also am a contributor to the new, I believe it is the National Bracket Congress, a group of about 20 of us that are putting together our own list, and then we debate back and forth of how that comes out. I'm guessing it'll show up on the Matrix as NBC. And then Graham Doran, who was a top 5 bracketologist last year, and Kerry Miller are running a new competition this year that was invite only, inviting, I believe, 20 to 25 bracketologists. And I'll be taking place in that. It's a little bit different than the Matrix in that instead of going by seed line, it's going by exact seed placement. Mm-hmm. So if you have Purdue as a 1 in the bracket matrix, you'll get full points for them showing up on the 1 line. Whereas in this competition, if you have them as your number 1 overall, you only get full points if they're at that exact spot. Mm-hmm. And then the closer you are to that spot, the better. This will also reward teams that are in the first 4 out. So, you know, for instance, if I have Indiana State as my first team out and they end up the last team in, I would still get points for that. So we'll, good. That's new. We'll see how that goes. But
so just, this is basically your fantasy football.
Very much so. That that is how I would compare it very well.
I think the best thing that bracketologists get to do is when the bracket comes out, they can say, look, I wasn't wrong. The committee was wrong. They got it wrong. I was right. Like, I did it right.
I always used to do a follow-up article of where the committee got it wrong. And the more I've done it, the more I've come to realize, unfortunately, they can't get it wrong. Right. Only we can get it wrong.
Right.
All right. So, Alan, let's start here. As we record this podcast on Tuesday, where do you have Marquette in your S-curve?
So at the moment, I have Marquette number 7 overall, which places them as the 3rd 2 seed. They end up going to Indianapolis and playing through there into the Detroit region, where Purdue is both the number 1 overall team that I have and the number 1 seed in that bracket. My reasoning behind that, and right now I think it's most likely Marquette, if they stay on the 2 line, they're either going to end up in the Midwest with Purdue or they're going to end up in the South with Houston. Main reasons, they can't go east because that's where UConn is going to be. And on the 2 line, Arizona is the most likely team to go out west, unless everything goes poorly and the Wildcats are able to win their way back up to the 1 line. That'll push Marquette into one of those 2 other regions. And then it comes down mostly to who ends up at number 5, whether it is Tennessee or North Carolina, because the number 5 overall can't go to the same region as the top seed. So even though both Tennessee and Carolina, their preference would be Detroit in the Midwest regional, neither of them can go there if they're number 5 overall, because Purdue will be the number 1 overall most likely. And that opens that up for Marquette. My hope is that we end up there, because I have much better feelings about eventually playing Purdue, assuming they even get that far, than I do about playing Houston, who is a terrifying defensive nightmare.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with Houston.
Yeah, not to get off Marquette just yet, but just a quick note. Is it pretty much a deadlock, no matter what happens this week, that Purdue, UConn, and Houston are not only 1 seeds, but their regions are set? Maybe the order isn't set, but those 3, it's going to be a lock. Purdue's going to be 1 in the Midwest, UConn's going to be 1 in the East, and Houston's going to be 1 in the South.
I don't see any way that that changes. That seems to be completely locked in, both because they're certain to be 1 seeds, they're certain to be the top 3 teams, and all of them have very clear preferences. UConn doesn't want to go to the Midwest or the South. They're no competition for Houston in that regard. Same thing with Houston in the South, same thing with Purdue in the Midwest. So no matter how it shakes out, even if the committee juggles that 1-3 order, those 3 teams will be in those 3 regions.
Okay, so let's get back on Marquette a little bit. How much movement can you see Marquette making this week, either good or bad?
So my thought process right now is, most likely, I would say it's roughly 60-39 that they're going to end up a two seed. Where things really get a little bit dicey is if they both play and lose to Creighton. I think that's more likely to knock them down to that three line. I don't see any way they go lower than a three. I think that there is a 1% at best chance that they could get up to the one line. I wouldn't completely rule out Marquette being that last one seed if everything happened to go right and wrong for other people.
Right. So Marquette can't get to the one seed by themselves, right? It doesn't matter if you get to and win the Big East tournament. You can't get to a one seed that way. You've got to have help from other teams in their conference tournaments, right?
Entirely. What Marquette would both need to win the Big East, and I would say the Villanova, Creighton, UConn path would be ideal because that's adding three quad one wins, two of which are the quad 1A, which are the highest level of win you can get, Creighton and UConn. And you would need North Carolina to lose early. You'd need Tennessee to lose early. And you would probably need Arizona to lose early, though I think if Arizona didn't win their tournament, even if they went to the championship game and Marquette did, they may very well pass Arizona just because Arizona playing in the Pac-12 doesn't have the ability to add the quantity of quality wins that Marquette can add in the Big East tournament.
So I guess so they're by all intents and purposes locked into either a two or three by your estimate. Is it fair to say, even if Marquette doesn't play Creighton, like if Marquette loses to Villanova or they play Creighton and lose to Creighton, then Marquette's a three. Otherwise, if they get to that Big East tournament final, they're locked in as a two.
I think that's probably fair. The other question is you have to look, they're sort of in the top bunch of teams. There's three main groups. The first group is that Houston, UConn, Purdue group that we talked about. The next group, the three teams fighting for that last one seed, are Tennessee, North Carolina, and Arizona. And then there's a group from Marquette all the way down to about the 14 position right now, which depending on how you look at it is Duke, Kansas, Alabama, all right around that range at the end of the three, top of the four line. And those teams from 7 to 14 are very muddy. They're very close to each other. It's hard to separate them. I think if worse comes to worse, Marquette could fall, but depending on what happens in the Big 12 tournament, three of the teams right behind Marquette right now are Baylor, Kansas, and Iowa State. All of them are on the same side of the Big 12 bracket, so they can't all get to the final. The odds are maybe one of them will, and who knows if Texas decides to play spoiler and is able to pull a couple of upsets, that would strengthen Marquette's resume as Texas moves further on up and becomes a more valuable win since we beat them already. Texas could knock out everybody that's in competition for that three seed, which would make what Marquette does at MSG that much less important simply because nobody would be able to pass them even if they didn't do particularly well.
So is there a possibility where Creighton and Marquette end up as two seeds out of the Big East?
There is. I think that for that to happen, you would need the people behind us to lose early. If you get that Texas run, say Texas makes a run to the Big 12 final, that will keep anybody from passing us from behind. And then if Creighton beats Marquette, some people even have Creighton ahead of Marquette at the moment, though my thought process is that you will likely see Marquette ahead of Creighton because of the Kolek injury. I think, you know, a week and a half ago, there's no doubt that Marquette was clearly ahead of Creighton. The only time that that's changed is when Tyler Kolek hasn't been playing. And when you take the best point guard in the country off the floor, that's going to logically follow that you aren't going to play at the same level. If he's coming back, if he's healthy, say he's able to go for 20, 25 minutes against Villanova post, you know, 15 and 8, something like that, I think the committee will have full confidence that Marquette's going to be 100%. And that would more likely keep them on the two line if nobody else really does anything impressive behind them other than Creighton.
You know, Alan, I said on the show the other day, you know, at this moment we're recording on Tuesday, we don't know Kolek's status. I'm guessing we won't know for sure until tip off on Thursday. But all I really want out of this week is A, everyone to come out of it as healthy as realistically possible, and B, for Marquette to have a two resume. And whatever the bare minimum that has to happen to get there is what I want to see. What are you – obviously, for them to win the whole thing would be awesome. It's fun to win the championship, of course. But realistically, what is your hope for Marquette this week, both from a perspective of games played, games won, and Colic?
So I was chuckling when you were talking about that because it got me thinking about the Big East tournament. And – first of all, the most important thing, obviously, is Tyler Colic's health. And if we ended up falling to a three seed, it might make a little bit more difficult path, but you're not going to convince me that there's that big of a difference between who we're going to see as a 14 versus a 15, as a 6 versus a 7. You know, the path to a Sweet 16 is still there either way. So I either want them to go out right away with Colic looking somewhat decent, or if we're going to solidify the two, the way to do it is beat Villanova. Then at that point, you beat Creighton because you don't want them to pass you and say, well, we beat them with a healthy Colic on a neutral court. And at that point, when we beat Creighton, now we're playing Saturday night. I mean, we're not going to have any benefit from playing and losing that game. Let's just play it, win it, see how it all comes out. You know, I mean, I think we owe UConn at least one this year, and I'd be more than happy to give that to them in Glendale in about a month, but you know, we can give them a taste of it first on Saturday. I have no issue with that.
It would be fun. I even said last year, I didn't care about the Big East tournament until Marquette won it. That I thought it was freaking awesome. So I guess, and I also told Phil on the last show, you know, the players don't look at it the same way we do. Like once they're out there, they're not playing cautious or playing, oh, I just don't want to get hurt. Right. They're playing, if they're on the floor, they're playing to win.
Exactly. And the way I'll always look at it is if we need to beat Creighton to lock up that two seed, we might as well do it. And then there's no downside to just going out there and going after it.
Right. Well, and so I guess, you know, you mentioned the difference between 6-7, and I don't really care about the 14-15, right? 2 versus 3 seed. Mm-hmm. I don't care about those teams, right? But just looking at bracket matrix, these are the teams on the 6-7 line right now, right? And obviously that can shift, but you've got Utah State, Wisconsin, which I don't think Wisconsin could be in our bracket at in the round of 32, right? Because we regular season matchup.
They could be, but they will try to avoid that if possible. Right. They try to avoid regular season rematches in the first and second round. Second weekend, all bets are off.
Okay, fair enough. So you got Utah State, you got Wisconsin, you got Washington State, you got Texas Tech, you have Dayton, Nevada, Gonzaga, and Florida. Like, if I'm looking at teams that worry me, and obviously Wisconsin worries me a little bit just because we can't, Shaka can't seem to unlock that one yet. But they're playing like garbage, so also bring them on. Utah State and Washington State are the ones out of that list of 8 that worry me.
I actually am less worried about Washington State personally. They're one of the teams I would like to see us draw.
Okay.
Mainly because they have a sub 200 pick and roll defense. And that coupled with playing in a Pac-12 that isn't the most terrifying of leagues.
Right.
I think they're a team that's somewhat suspect. The team that I am most worried about that I've been seeing pop up on some 6-7 lines recently, and some Marquette fans won't like this because they always say anybody but Dayton. I want to see anybody but Dayton. Dayton has a top 10 pick and roll defense. They have a legitimate star in Deron Holmes, who was originally recruited by Marquette at the same time. He's unquestionably one of the best players in the country, number 3 in KenPom's Player of the Year rankings. And they're a team that shoots over 40% from three while slowing it down. They have that exact prototype for, we're going to drag the game out. We're going to knock you out with big shots. We have a tough guy in the middle who can handle it. And our defense is built to slow down your offense.
Mm. Well, and it would be a fit to function like Marquette getting a tough game in the second round in terms of both location and the team, right? Dayton, you know, if we're in Indy, Dayton is not that far from Indy.
They are not. They're certainly closer to it than we are.
Right.
And I keep seeing mocks with Michigan State and Indianapolis too. I know that is going to make Marquette fans roll their eyes too.
That actually is where I had Michigan State land in my most recent bracket, was in Indianapolis as the 10 seed with Marquette. What the committee generally tries to do once they get past that top, the top four seed lines, is they're going to get teams as close to home as possible, provided you're not creating a significant geographic disadvantage, which means within 75 miles of campus. And because they want to get the ticket sales up. So, you know, that's why we're going to run into a team that, if they can, is closer and without violating the committee's bracketing principles. So Michigan State wouldn't violate any bracketing principles. At the moment, Michigan State, Washington State is who I have opposite Marquette in that 7-10 matchup.
Maybe a few more notes on Marquette, then maybe we'll talk a little Big East overall and then wrap this thing up, Alan. But you kind of touched on it a little bit there, but are there any matchups that would you say dream matchups for Marquette, say early on, that maybe you're hoping to see when the brackets are revealed, or any that you're really cringing, like, oh my gosh, I hope we don't get this, get paired with these guys?
Those two, the Washington State and Dayton, are two that have definitely been jumping out at me as teams that I would like to see, as teams that I would not like to see. In that the first round game, one team that I really don't want to have anything to do with is Morehead State. They just punched their ticket the other night. They have their Ohio Valley Conference, the player of the year, Riley Minix, is there. They've got a guy, Deontay Miles, who plays a ton. He's a 7-footer. He started his career at Xavier. Their top 30 pick and roll defense. And they also have a kid who Marquette fans may or may not remember, Jordan Lathan. He was a top 100 recruit. He played at the Fiserv against Marquette all the way back in December 2018 against the Howard and Hauser team. And as a freshman, put up 26 at the Fiserv, was an absolute star. That's a team that if we can avoid them, I would love to avoid them. Who do I want to see? That first game, my hope is that we end up with a Big Sky team. Doesn't matter who they end up playing, but in their last 12, they have 10 double-digit losses as a league. The other two were 9-point losses. Montana is going to be the favorite in that. They don't have any high major down transfers, sub 300 pick and roll defense. It's a dream situation for Marquette. One other outside possibility to watch in that first game, most likely if they get in, UW-Milwaukee will be a 16 seed. However, there is a scenario, depending on who wins in other leagues, Milwaukee could end up on the 15 line, Marquette ends up on the 2 line, and suddenly you've got two Midwest teams who their closest spot to home is Indianapolis, and we end up with another shot at UW-Milwaukee in the first round, a team that we haven't seen in quite a while. So I wouldn't rule that possibility out.
That's what we call the news director's dream. Like people, local media, it's like, oh, well, we only have to spend one ticket to cover two teams. Like I remember when I was working in Oklahoma, we would love when like Oklahoma and Oklahoma State or Oklahoma and Tulsa would be sent to the same place. Like, ah, that's just one plane ticket, one hotel room. No problem.
Oh, I would not be excited about that matchup at all. Just like, I'm not a superstitious guy, but like 36-0 being on the line in a 2-15 matchup. No, thank you, sir. Pass. That almost makes me want to get the 3 at the end of the day, because there's no way they get pushed up to the 14 line.
There is no chance.
It was worth Marquette's last two great March runs both started from the 3 line.
That is true.
2013 and 2003, they started on the 3 line.
Yep, very true.
All right, Alan, before we get out of here, I just want to touch maybe on the Big East as a whole. The bracket picture for the Big East at the top is very clear. You've already touched on it. UConn is a clear number one. Marquette and Creighton are both very comfortably in as either 2 or 3 seeds. And then there's this big old gap, and you got 4 teams as bubble teams. None of them are safe right now, but you would think the Big East should get more than 3 teams in. Of those bubble teams, St. John's, Seton Hall, Providence, and Villanova, who do you have in the best position right now?
Right now, Seton Hall is the team that I think is most likely to get in. I think Seton Hall gets in even with a loss to St. John's on Thursday. They've got wins over UConn, Marquette, Villanova. They beat St. John's twice already. if you go to BartTorvik.com on T-Rank, you can look at comparative resumes. And if you filter out all of the auto bids, because you don't want to consider teams against somebody who automatically got in, the 10 most similar resumes to Seton Hall's all made it as at-large berths. So I think the Pirates are going to get in. Their metrics from a predictive measure, which is KenPom and BPI, are not great. So it's entirely possible that they'll end up in Dayton. But the Pirates should be in the field as a top four team in the Big East. I know they'll always say conference record doesn't matter, but it's hard to leave a 13-7 team out when, you know, they did what they did. They have the wins that they have. After them, I think St. John's is in pretty good shape. So far in the history of the new Big East, since 2014, when it started, every team that has gone 10-8 or 11-9 has made it into the field. So basically a winning record in the Big East, aside from the COVID year when you had a couple of 10-9 teams who had games canceled, everybody else has made it in with one exception. Of course, that was 2014 St. John's. So if the Johnnies are looking at connections, that they are the one that didn't get there. But the win over Creighton, they beat Utah in non-con, beat Villanova twice. And again, if you do that filter on T-Rank, 9 of the 10 most similar resumes to St. John's all got in. Another team that might end up in Dayton, in my dream scenario, they would end up in Dayton playing against New Mexico, so that you have Rick Pitino versus Richard Pitino.
Oh, boy.
Love to see that.
The committee would totally do that, too.
Oh, no reason not to. And the thing is, with those teams, there's a decent chance you're going to have two Big East teams in Dayton. You can't put them against each other if you've only got two. So it's a 50-50 shot if New Mexico gets in and St. John's is going to Dayton with another Big East team like Seton Hall. It's going to be one of the two. You might as well get what's going to get the most viewing dollars coming in.
I mean, could we see, to your point, Seton Hall and St. John's, nor would you want to do this, right? Because they'll play in the Garden on Thursday against each other. So it's not like you want to go and do that again a week later, but in Dayton, that feels weird. But, you know, I see a lot of like Drake and Indiana State, both on the 11 line. Do you have a Drake versus Seton Hall and a St. John's versus Indiana State and say, you know, MVC and Big East duke it out to see who's better kind of thing?
And that would, if you end up with two teams from two leagues, that's what they'll do. They'll end up splitting it up and keeping them apart. Now, because Drake won the auto bid, they can't go to Dayton. It's always the last four at larges and the last four auto bids. So four of them will be 16 seed auto bids. Right now, most likely you're going to see a team from the NEC, the SWAC, the MEAC, and then the last one is a little bit of a wild card. South Dakota State will probably be in the mix there as a team that might end up in Dayton. Then the other four are going to be your last four at larges. So that's where you're going to see a Big East team or two. New Mexico is another team that's going to be in that mix. Any of those last ACC teams like Wake or Pitt, if they were to get in, Virginia might end up in there as well. But those are all going to be at large teams playing in those games. As far as the other two Big East teams, though, I don't feel nearly as confident about them. Providence, I would say, is probably in better shape of the two. They have a 19-12 record, wins over Marquette, Creighton, Wisconsin, Seton Hall. But when you filter out, only two of the 10 most similar resumes on T-Rank got in. Really, the drawback for Providence is they just don't have the metrics to go along with it. And what I feel was always the case with Ed Cooley, his teams would win some games, but they didn't win them very convincingly. And early on in the season, Kim English was doing the exact same thing. They weren't winning games as convincingly as they could. As a result, they just don't have the numbers to support the few wins of quality that they do have. Two of the 10 most similar got in. They have a shot if they're able to win their first game against Georgetown and beat Creighton. It would be hilarious if they lost that first game against Georgetown, just because it's Ed Cooley on the other side. The other team, I really do not like where Villanova is at right now. I think to get in, they have to beat Marquette. And that's assuming that they beat DePaul first. They have some really nice wins at the top of their resume. They beat North Carolina, Creighton, Texas Tech, got Providence twice. But the drawback is they're already 17-14. In the history of the NCAA tournament, only three teams have ever gotten at-large berth with 15 or more losses, which Villanova, to get an at-large, would have to lose again. You know, if they win the Big East tournament, it's all bets are off, matter they're in. But 19-15 got 2017 Vanderbilt, 2018 Alabama, 2019 Florida in. So I think Villanova has to at least get to there. Even at that point, I'm not sure that they have the metrics, and I'm not sure that the committee is going to consider enough what happens later in the week. I think wins on Wednesday will probably matter. Wins on Thursday might matter. Wins on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the committee isn't really going to pay any attention to when it comes to those at-large teams. I think those games are going to be more important for that top 16, for teams like Marquette, teams like Creighton, and differentiating where you've got a big grouping of teams that are very close. If you can say, hey, this team is a champion, well, that's going to push them up a little bit. But none of the bubble teams are going to have that as something that gets them in or out, because if you're on the bubble, it means you didn't win a championship.
So would it be fair to say, because we talked a little bit about, you know, I'm fully on board with Joe's plan of 15 pieces of flair, right? We're going to do the absolute minimum here to protect health and get through. If Tyler doesn't play Thursday, presumably against Villanova, will the committee discount the value of that win should Nova defeat Marquette in that game? Does that almost say they have to go beat Creighton to get in?
So, I'm sorry. Hit me with that last part of that again.
Does beating a colicless Marquette count for nearly enough to get them in, or do they have to beat Creighton, as presuming Creighton's okay there, to get to the Big East final in order to get an at-large?
I think just beating Marquette alone would be value enough. Even without Kolick, this is a team that pretty thoroughly handled Xavier, was right there with Creighton and UConn. The value of the game, generally, the committee will discount more what happens to the team without the player than they will the team that beat the team without the player.
Mm.
So, you know, when you think about losing somebody, if, you know, you're going to go back and look at the games that Marquette played without a Stevie Mitchell or without Kolick, without Oso, it'll have a potentially positive effect on Marquette and say, well, they probably would have done better without them. But you're not going to look and say Providence's win is over Marquette is less significant when they beat us without Stevie. You're not going to say Creighton's win is less significant.
I do think those things, but yes, I'm not the committee, thankfully.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, because of the level of domino effect it is, it's a lot easier to boil it down and look at one team and say, okay, we're going to take these couple games as less important. But when you roll that out, especially if you have someone who missed a longer period of time, Illinois without Terrence Shannon, for instance, that's a lot of games to discount, a lot of games to juggle. You can look at it through the Illinois lens, but doing the same thing through everybody they played in that time is a lot more difficult.
Got it. Makes sense.
Yeah. So I think, kind of in summary, looking at Thursday in the Big East tournament, you got the Johnnies and Seton Hall, and what kind of feels like a win, and I wouldn't say win and in, but win and you'd feel pretty good, right? Like win and feel good about it. And then you got Villanova and Providence that have great opportunity, bet a dime on it, but they both have a great opportunity to play both Creighton and Marquette. And if you get those two wins, I mean, that's pretty good. Again, I wouldn't bet anything on them, either Providence or Villanova, getting two wins like that, but they have an opportunity and work to do. So opportunity and work to do at the bottom, and the Johnnies and Hall have a win and feel pretty good game.
Yeah, and whoever loses that game will definitely be a little bit more stressed than the other, just because, again, opportunity, when you lose, you're out of opportunities. You can't make yourself look any better. But my gut says those are going to be the two teams that get in, and I think it's going to end up being a five-bid league.
Yeah, because I mean, three feels way too low. Even four kind of feels low for this league. I would hope it's five, even if two of them are in Dayton, like you said. All right, guys, yeah. Before we wrap this up, quick Big East tournament predictions. Who do you think is going to be standing on last team standing on Saturday?
Oh, I'm going to go with Connecticut. I think it's, yeah. I mean, it's kind of easy, right? They're the best team in the league.
I think that Connecticut is definitely the obvious pick, but if we're getting a healthy Kolick back, I don't know that he wants to go out like that. So I'll be the homer. I'll take the optimism from Optimistic Phil, and I'm going with Marquette.
Attaboy. I like
it. Let's cut nets again.
All right. Well, you know what? We like to give back to our guests. So you're welcome to the Optimistic Phil vibes.
There you go. That's good. And I'm kind of with – until I see healthy Kolick out there, I'm just going to assume it's going to be Connecticut beating Creighton in the final on Saturday. And hopefully Marquette's done enough to get a two seed. Hey, Alan, appreciate all your insight. You do a great job on cracksidewalks.com. I'm thinking to make Crackatology a thing. We're gonna call what you do. Appreciate all your insight, and hey, we'll check in again at some point.
Sounds good. You got a better name for it than I do. I think I might be stealing that one from you.
Okay.
I can see the tweet already this afternoon.
Yeah. If you guys want to keep up with Alan's stuff, he is Brew City 1977. That is as Milwaukee as a Twitter handle gets. He's Brew City 1977 on X Twitter. And as always, you can interact with me and Phil on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-O-F 23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. Post the podcast there. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Gentlemen, have a good week, and we will reconnect on Selection Sunday.
Sounds good. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Alan.